Now at the end of Romans 12 and verse 8, and we have come to the point where we've completed the first component to the first form of doctrine that we are going to receive as sons. And really, the truth is, when it comes to you knowing what you should know and having looking at this component and having everything that you need to have in order to get the full effectual working. And that's what we're after, is that everything about the thinking and the conduct, the living and the laboring with your Father from verses 3 through 8, to get that full effectual working, the truth of the matter is you shouldn't, like I said, want or desire to go on, because you shouldn't be quite satisfied yet. That you have the full effectual working of verses 3 through 8. Something should be missing, and you've rightly seen that, because the truth is there's more that goes on to providing for the full effectual working to either it can be an entire form of doctrine, and you'll have these pauses, say when we come to the end of verse 16, we're going to have a pause there because we get to the end of a whole form of doctrine, the whole form of the instruction of wisdom. Or when you're just dealing with a component within a form of doctrine, there's more that goes on to provide for its effectual working than simply studying it out in a portion of God's Word in which it's found. In other words, there's more to it than that. And there's a big if. In fact, there's two big ifs. There's more to it than that if you're being properly educated as a son. And that assumes that the one who's teaching the doctrine knows what he's doing, which most pastors don't. And that would be a real frustrating thing to most of them who spend all the money and the time to go through Bible college, Bible institute, and seminary, and then find out that they have no idea what they're doing. They're really not even qualified to be a pastor. Because losing your novice status really means that as a pastor, you should be at least through all of level one before even getting into the pulpit. But they don't even know what the curriculum is. So that tells you how well qualified they really are biblically to do their job. So one, if you're going to be properly educated as a son, there's more to it than just simply sitting down, studying it out, and you come to the end of it and say, I got it. That's it, I got it. But the other if is, if true godly edifying, which is in faith, is what you're after taking place within you, there's more to it than just, again, studying it out in the Bible. Now that may sound blasphemous, but it's true. As a son being properly educated and one who's concerned with real godly edifying, which is in faith, taking place within you, there's another step than just getting to the end of intelligently understanding what it says. And since we are at the end of the first component, the first form of our sonship edification doctrine, we have to take time to go over this. And we have to take some time to make sure we don't have when it comes to what you see in verses 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, that what we wind up with isn't just a talking about it type appreciation of it, so to speak. And when I say talking about it, you could sit down and talk about it. You might even be able to sit down and teach it to somebody. You could actually sit down and teach this to somebody and tell them what the four major body attributes of conduct and behavior are, where they're to be found, and blah, 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 and go all the way through it. But to me, that's what I mean by just a talk. All you can do is talk about it. Verses Romans 12, 3 through 8 isn't just to be talked about or thought about. It's to be done. It's to actually have work associated with it that takes place. The body's supposed to do something. And so we have to make sure that we have a working, living reality of it taking place in our inner man, and that you especially know how to respond to the doctrine that you've just learned. And so that you intelligently know not only what it says, but you know what to do with it. And it's only when it goes from knowing what it says intelligently, properly, knowing what it says, to doing with it, what it's designed to do and for you to do, only then will you be able to come and gain the full effectual working of it. That's what we're after. So when it comes to this fourth volitional testing point in your sonship life, I want you to appreciate this is going to be an ongoing volitional testing point. It's going to be continuous, a continuous point of testing your volition, which will occur every time you come to the end of a component, or every time you come to the end of a form of doctrine. You're going to have some kind brief, and they'll get brief. They're not all going to be like this, I guarantee you. I'm not doing this every single time. But since it's our first time, we need to make sure of it. And it'll get shorter and shorter. But it is going to be a continuous point of testing of your volition, and it continues throughout the entire span of your whole sonship education. And there's a reason for that. And I think this is the ingenious way in which God built the curriculum. Because if the volitional testing point, it's actually that, it's the volitional testing point that will always occur whenever you've learned something. And the fullness of the teaching for what you've learned has fully been provided for, and the teacher has fully taught the material properly and sufficiently for it to do its job. But when that point occurs, then you as a son know that you've arrived at this volitional testing point, and just as that phrase suggests, the activity now shifts from the father or from the teacher to you as a son. And this is where, for most Christians, they're going to want to leave in just a few minutes, if they haven't already wanted to leave. Of course, that doesn't apply today, but if we had a full group of us, smattering of other believers in here, they'd want to get up and leave very shortly. Because the activity shifts from the teacher to you, the son. And now your active role is going to take up at the end of the teaching. And every time we come to the end of a component or the end of a form of doctrine, the active role shifts from the teaching to you going into action on your own to provide your part. You have something to provide. This isn't just a one-way teaching street. You knew that going in. You were told that in the commitment levels when you understood and appreciated that back there in the book of Proverbs, you're going to lift your voice up. You're going to cry after knowledge and lift your voice up after understanding. You learned that back in chapter 2 and verse 3. If thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, that you have an active role to play in this. And any father who educates a son knows that. I don't care if you've taught him to tie his shoes. You're not going to tie them for him. You're going to teach him to do it, and then you're going to wait, and you're going to see how he responds to it. And if he comes walking through that house with those shoelaces all untied and everything, you know that all that teaching that you didn't go anywhere. He may be able to draw a perfect knot, but that's not the point of the teaching. The point of the teaching isn't so that you could sit down and draw that dumb little chart that I had at the end of the last class. I call all my charts dumb. But the little cartoons and the things that I do, those little visual aids, that's not the point of the teaching. The teaching isn't to sit down and be able to regurgitate what you were taught. The teaching is designed so that when it effectually works in you, you do with it what it was designed to do. It's designed to do a job. And every component and every form to every, or every component to every form of doctrine that we're going to study is designed that way. Nothing is taught to you superfluously. You don't have courses in sonship education that you I can't think of the word right now. It's not the word monitor. What do you do when you just go through a class in college and you're not taking it for a grade? You're just going in there. Audit. The audit. There's no There's no courses in sonship edification that you just audit. Every single thing you're taught, this thing has been scaled down so that each component of it builds, it attaches itself to the previous one and builds upon it and builds upon it and builds upon it to an ultimate goal, ultimate aim, and ultimate objective. And so therefore, the critical aspect is that the information isn't just something that you come along to and say, I got it, I can regurgitate it. That's not the point. That's not what a father's looking for. That's why I don't really care if you can tell me back the doctrine in the same words that I told it to you. Now, if it's the words of God, that's another thing. But what I'm saying is, what I'm after is, and what I'm always going to be after in this assembly, is when we come to the end of it, to be able to evaluate whether or not we can move on. And whether or not we can move on has nothing to do with the fact that you could sit there and you can tell me in great detail what every single little aspect of every piece of the doctrine is all about. I expect that probably could be done anyway. But what's critical is that you can take all those details and all that information, and you can, without opening your mouth, you can actually begin conducting yourself and laboring in the local assembly, and that tells me that you're ready to move on. That tells any father that you're ready to move on. If you're going to teach your son other knots than tying his shoe knot, the knot in his shoe, you're not going to teach him a closed hip, hitch, loop, double zingy, or I don't know what they're called. I didn't learn knots. I'm not nautical. But you're not going to teach him a closed loop hitch thing until he can first of all tie his shoes. And you don't just buy him slippers to avoid the issue. There's nothing like that. There's no sidesteps in this curriculum. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking, when I talk about the full effectual working of this, this ongoing continuous point of testing your volition is something that we're looking for the proper response to the information that allows a father to know his son is ready to move on. That's what this testing point is for. It's not so much a checkpoint as it is just a simple volitional testing point. And it's going to be an ongoing issue with all the doctrine, because, and it'll always occur. And as a teacher, you're looking for that information to not only have been fully learned, but to know it's been fully learned. Once it's been fully taught, it's going to do the job it was designed to do, and that's the indicator. But when that occurs, and all that information's been taught, and it's been properly presented and properly gone over and dealt with enough for it to sufficiently do its job, you as a son, you know now, we're now arriving, we know we're going to arrive at this testing point, and therefore you're going to respond to it with your active role in it. And you go into action to provide your part, and every time you finish off a component or a form of doctrine, even a full form of doctrine, we encounter this testing point, and therefore you as a son are going to be tested as to your responding to it, again, either positively, well, not either, but both positively and properly. And folks, this takes us beyond something that we used to teach here that was only half the picture. Positive volition toward Bible doctrine. That isn't going to cut it. Don't you just love it when you come up to things where you realize, man, that was a big deal. And your father says, well, son, that's only half the deal. Okay. Well, but this is, and this is where you and I have got to, we've come to this understanding that we're going to meet kind of halfway. I'm to do my job as the teacher, but you've got a role to play, and there's activity on your part that needs to be done. And that activity on your part is what's going to what fills in the rest of what needs to be done, so that what's just been learned can do its effectual job to the very best of its ability as to how it's been taught and how it's been learned by you at that, up to that point. And so that's the real critical nature. And again, this is a huge departure, and it's an enormous difference from the way the average Christian, quote, goes to church, or the average Christian goes to Bible study. We're going to have Bible study. We're going to study the book of Mark, and we're going to study it all. Or we're going to study. Most people don't do that anymore. It's only rare that you find actual expository preaching done anymore. It's almost never taught. It's almost never done. Almost the norm and rule of the day is to teach topically. You're on a topic. And the big thing is series. I got a new series, a series on divorce, a series on marriage, a series on prophecy, a series on healing, a series on money, a series on blessings, a series on or they'll take parts of the Bible, a series on the Sermon on the Mount, a series on this, a series on that, get my latest series, get my latest DVD, blah, 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 ad infinitum, ad nauseum. And nothing is happening. And I mean that. Nothing of any real biblical, spiritual, God-honoring, godly consequence is happening. There is no godliness taking place. There's godly pretending going on. And that's really what it is. It's godly pretension. I never thought about that, but I need to trademark that. I can come up with one on my own once in a while. That's really what you've got. It's godly pretending. It's pretension. It's not real. Look, I could actually take a Grey's Anatomy, and given enough time and enough dead animals, I could find them on the side of the road to take home and practice on. I could probably get good enough to be able to actually perform an appendectomy on somebody. Or some minor surgery. I might be able to do it as good as a surgeon could do it. But the difference is I'm not qualified, I'm just pretending to be a surgeon. And the truth of the matter is there's vast areas that I'm unaware of that if something went wrong, I'd have no way to respond to. That's Christianity today. They are honestly pretending to be things that they read in the Bible. Pretending to be godly, pretending to be God-honoring. And their pretension has some very real elements to it. They use language, godly language. They dress in godly attire. They would never think of doing bad things, so-called. But it's all pretension. If something goes wrong, they have no idea what to do. And you see that every time something goes wrong. Whether their house gets hit by a hurricane, or whether somebody gets killed by a criminal, or whether somebody, it's a child that dies with cancer, or whether it's a teenager who dies because they've driven too fast into a light pole. Whenever something happens, their pretense comes out. Their pretense is now revealed. They've just been pretending because all they can come up with is, well, God must have meant it for a reason. And they don't have no idea why. They have no idea what to say except cliche after cliche after cliche to try to get the folks around them and whatever media may be interested in it assuaged enough to know that they're not crazy. But it's all pretending. There's no real, honest godliness going on. And that can only go on in the life of a son and in the life of a daughter who's been educated by their father properly to bear the name of God, which is what you're being trained to do. God-likeness. You're being trained to bear His name. Just like you'd be trained to bear the name physician. You're being trained to bear the name godly. You're being godly edified. Edified unto godliness, which is in faith. Well, this is hugely different than just getting together to gather Bible information because we feel like that's the right thing that Christians ought to do, or learning in a Bible study some Bible truths where real godly sonship edification doesn't go on, because godly sonship edification, for one thing, demands your participation. And it's a vitally important thing to understand and appreciate as a son what your role is. That's what a father and a son need to get straight in sonship orientation and in sonship establishment. Here's my role, son, and here's your role. And that's what some of those things back in Proverbs was able to tell you, what your role, what your action, what the father expects to take place by you at the end of each component and each form of doctrine you learn. And folks, that's a vitally important thing, that you understand and appreciate what it means to respond positively and properly to the doctrine that you just learned. And this is what I've talked about before, as the kind of, I call it kind of a positive pressure, a good pressure, a positive type demand, a good type demand that you take upon yourself as an adult son that you are. We're not talking about children here. We're talking about adults. And it is adulthood type action that we're after. We're not just after a little boy being able to tie his shoes. Folks, in the form of doctrine we just learned up there in Romans chapter 12, verses 3 through 8, we're talking about something that is a vital aspect to the very life of a body, of the local assembly. The giving, the ruling, the showing mercy. Man, those are critical operations. The sustenance, sustaining the local assembly, bringing orderliness to the local assembly, and bringing soundness to the body. That's not childhood behavior. And the response on your part isn't going to be childish or childhood. It's adult type adulthood type action that's to be taken on your part. And we've skirted the word long enough. That's basically called responsibility. That's sonship responsibility. The doctrine of Romans 12 verses 3 through 8 has now been taught properly. Everything that I know to do has been done, for it's effectual job to be done. And it's prepared now to do this last thing. And in the last thing, the volition testing point, when you respond positively and properly to it, folks, it's then that it gets written on the fleshy table of your heart. And we're going to look at that. Come over to Proverbs chapter 3. I'm just going to point you to the verses, and we're not going to deal with it right now, but this is where we're going. Proverbs chapter 3 and the first four verses. Actually, this exhortation for us runs all the way down through here, and we've already dealt with some of it, the kind of spiritual merchandise that we can get, the information that we have really every Sunday morning, the verses we read comes from this exhortation. But what I'm really after is what the Father does here in the first four verses. He says, my son, this isn't the first time he's said my son, but this is the first time that he's said it in this way, in which he's now going to assume in verses 1, 2, 3, and 4 that the son has now, for the first time, actually learned something. And that's the nature of the context in which this my son is given. It's obvious that the other times he's talked about, as chapter 2 opened up, my son, the son hadn't actually learned anything. He's being exhorted there, but it's not an exhortation after something's been learned, but now it has. How do I know that? Look at what he says, forget not my law. Well, that means he had to learn it. By the way, that's not talking about the law of Moses or the Ten Commandments. Forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. And he's going to talk to him about two things here. How to respond to it in two different ways. Bind them about thy neck and then write them upon the table of thine heart. And once that's done, so shalt thou find favor and good understanding. Not, look, understanding in the sight of God and man. And by the way, that's completely consistent with what we're going to do as we begin to use our godly wisdom as a decision-making skill that has to do with not only us within this local assembly to begin with, but later on, those in our business and those we encounter out in the world. We're going to come back to that and learn some more things about this, about our positive and proper response, but this is where it's coming from. But that's a sonship responsibility. And once you come to the table, as it were, or once the Father allows for your positive and proper response, your volition to be tested, once He's taught it all, and now it's prepared to be written on the fleshy tables of your heart, and that'll be done by what you will add to it, to the doctrine you just learned, in your positive and proper response to it. And it'll make it so that when all that's done, we as an assembly can then almost collectively know that we can, and we're ready then to move on to the next component. And these times of hitting on these volitional testing points, these are the times for your sonship responsibility to then come into play. And that's what adulthood-type sonship living is really all about. It's about sonship responsibility. Responsibility with the liberty that you gained through the adoption of sons. And this responsibility goes beyond the issue of your initial sonship responsibility to respond to your sonship status. We're not talking about you crying, Abba, Father. This goes beyond that. That was a responsibility you had at that point, but this isn't just the response that you... We're not talking about the positive and proper response that you have to your sonship status. That's past. We're way past that. And it's beyond the issue of your sonship commitment to learning that came out of your sonship establishment. We're past that. All that information where you realized the levels of your commitment to getting your sonship education. In fact, the issue, for example, of your commitment to being here in class, honest class attendance. Man, that's not what we're talking about here at all. That's a past issue. If you're not honestly attending by now, you're hopeless. You're just going to be, like Paul said to the Corinthians, you're ignorant, let him be ignorant, but we're moving on. It's beyond engaging in interactive learning and your commitment to that. That's a past issue. You've been doing that. You did that before we even started this portion of it. You did that today. And it's beyond the issue, and should be beyond the issue, of you making your sonship education the top priority of your life. That's all past and a settled issue by now, or should be. I'll tell you this, if it's not, it's going to come out. And really, this is an issue of you as a son, and all of sonship education is designed by your Father to be this way. It's an issue of a positive and proper response to what you just have been taught, what you just learned. That's what He's after. He's not after a big review. He's after, okay, you got that? Yes. All right, let's make sure. And then He gives you an exhortation. This, in other words, this is not a volition testing as to your willingness to be educated as a son. I know that. I know you're willing. But it's a volition testing as to the immediate doctrine you just learned in the curriculum. And your Father's designed your education this way, ingeniously, so that this kind of testing of your volition and your response positively and properly to it will take place at the conclusion of every time a son learns something. And the genius of designing that way in the curriculum is just because a son comes along and responds positively and properly to the previous thing he learned in the previous component or form of doctrine that was just taught to him never guarantees that he'll do so the next time. The nature of how everything connects together and builds on top of one another, and the nature in which you have, you know, it's one thing to go through a form of education and all you have to grapple with are the rigors of the curriculum. That's it. When I was in music school, I had a professor who had a little card. He had written a huge book on music theory and all of this kind of thing, and he kept revising it. Now, he was 85 years old when I had him. And he had taken this big, thick book that he had written about music and how to properly understand it, and he had revised it down and revised it down, and now that whole big book he had fit onto one card. It was about 6 inches by 6x8 card or something like that. I still have it. And he used, on one side was all the scales, and on the other side was every possible rhythm you would ever encounter in music. And the job that you had was that you had to take this card and take your hand, and on your desk you had to start, and the first measure was a whole note. So you went 1, 2, 3, 4. And then the next measure was 2 half notes, and you went 1, 2, 3, 4. Now you didn't count, but you just would do that. And then you'd do quarter notes, eighth notes, 16th notes, and then you got into all the rests and the notes, every possible combination. And the job was to go from the first measure to the last measure without making a mistake. And tap that thing out on your desk and do the whole thing without making a mistake. Now, what I'm telling you about is most people, when they go through school, whatever subject you study, even in college, just all you really come up against are the rigors of the education. I never had somebody standing there when I was trying to tap that thing out going tippity-tappity-tappity-tippity-tappity-tappity and trying to screw me up, or coming along and trying to count. You ever start counting money out and somebody come along? When Cindy's counting her money out, she just has the rigors of having to make sure she counts right. She doesn't have some idiot member standing on the other side of the counter when she's counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, counting 9, 15, 32, 21, and screwing her up. What I'm after in all of this funny illustration is that what you're going to encounter as a son isn't just the rigors of sonship education. You have a concerted, determined, deliberate foe who is opposed to your education, who is going to do everything he can to trip you up, screw you up, and stop and stymie your education. So the genius of your father understands that just because you learned, and by the way, that word, that meaning of you learned something, you understand something, carries now more weight. It's not just that I got it in my head, and it's not just I got it in my heart. You know, people talk about head belief, heart belief. They're not even close to understanding it. It's got to be written on the fleshy table of the heart, and there has to be a responsive action on your part that demonstrates that you've got it. And your father so geniusly designed the curriculum so that these testing points of your volition occur at the end of every component and every form of doctrine, because he knows that just because you have got the previous form properly and responded to it positively and properly doesn't guarantee you'll do so the next time. Because it's not just the rigors of the curriculum, it's the rigors of the curriculum plus the ratcheting up of each step of it, a determined opposition to it. And while you may not have been separated from the love of Christ and when tribulation or distress came about, when it got out there to famine, nakedness, peril, and sword, but there's doctrine for every one of those that's designed to withstand those kind of attacks of the adversary. That's a. I hope you're starting to realize many, 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 many years ago now, or many, 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 many classes ago when we first started all of this, what I used to say when I talked about the fact that your father, when he designed this curriculum, he thought it out well. It is a well thought out curriculum. Well, therefore, the nature of this is it's a voluntary issue all the time that's going to be going on. Or not voluntary, but volitionary. Is that a word? I don't know. It kind of came out, I think it came up as a misspelled on my spell checker. But it's a ongoing volitionary issue, volitional issue. And not only that, but each form of doctrine, depending upon what it is, and depending upon what its effectual working is designed to produce, there can be a slight variation, so to speak, upon what constitutes that positive and proper response. And therefore, even though a son's volition is tested upon the completion of each thing that he's learned, a common feature that's always going to be ever there, it's just going to be something that you learn to live with, that's going to be the way of life as a son, is always for you to demonstrate a positive response to it and then a proper response to it. And depending upon what he's just learned, the positive response and the proper response won't always be exactly the same every time. As far as exactly what takes place with the completion of every form of doctrine. But the point is, there's always going to be those two issues. Sometimes they're going to be just really simple issues. Other times they're going to be rather involved. But there's always going to be those two. Always those two. Always a positive response and always a proper response. Because we're dealing with godly edifying. We're not just dealing with the way you think. We're dealing with the way you conduct yourself, and we're dealing with the way in which you labor. Well, let's at least get a definition of our terms up here, and then we can call it a day. But by the way, I don't know if I missed it or not, but when we talk about when I talk about learning or responding positively and properly to what you learned, you do know I'm talking about within the curriculum. I'm not talking about you were reading your Bible on your own and you read that Peter lopped off the high priest's servant's ear, and you need to respond positively and properly to that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about after you've passed Romans 12:3 and you've begun the curriculum. This is how the curriculum is built. Well, anyway, a positive response, what is that? That's the easiest one. What would you say could define a positive response? It's the easiest of the two. It's the one that you're more familiar with because of the way we used to study, you know. I thundered away at you for years. You got to have a positive volition toward Bible doctrine. What does that mean? Believe. You believe it. Right. Good. Anyone else? Willing. You're willing. Yeah. Good. You're on the mark. You're not wrong. Anybody else?
An attitude to accept and follow through.
Yeah, an attitude to accept and follow through. Yeah. Everything that we're doing right now is beginning, so it's going to be very simple, and we're going to keep it simple. And to me, that's important. The positive response will be the opposite of a negative one. Positive, negative. Positive, yes. Negative, no. So it's my understanding is, the way I kind of jotted down a little statement on it, is that it's a confident conviction. It's a yes factor That's what I put. Yes, you say, yeah, okay. It's a confident conviction in which the information gets laid down. By the way, that's part of what the word positive means. Something positive gets laid down in your human spirit without objection and without question. You don't object to it. There's no hold-ons. There's no, there's no negativeness to it. It's a positive response. It's all understood. It's accepted with all confidence and conviction. So I put a yes factor. The information is all understood and accepted with all confidence and conviction. I'm convicted that that's the truth of the matter. That's important, and that's not to be just thrown down lightly or any of those kinds of things, or taken lightly. And for those of us who I mentioned before are kind of out of the old school of the systematic approach that I so for years was mired in, and we used to espouse here the old ICE teaching acronym, or even from the way in which Bible doctrine and Bible teaching is commonly approached by most Christians today, all we ever really cared about was that. All we ever cared about was the positive response. As I said, I used to thunder it away, your positive volition to Bible doctrine. But the truth is, the reality is, that's not good enough. I'd like to have told some of the pastors that I knew back then, I'd like to tell them that right now. Well, the critical thing is that you're positive to Bible doctrine. I'd like to tell them and say, well, that's not good enough. There's something more than that. Because on closer examination to the Word of God itself, not to my opinion, but to the Word of God itself and the way God teaches, and there's the rub, because God doesn't teach the way they teach, and they don't teach the way God teaches. But the way the Father teaches, that's not all there is to it. Just a positive response isn't good enough. That is, it's not good enough. It's good, but it's not good enough for real, genuine, godly edification to take place. So then we have the proper response. Now, I'm not trying to say that you're going to be able to come up with everything here, but just all we're after is something very simple. What would you imagine anyway, or what would you think the proper response would be? If what? Good, yeah. Okay. That's good, decent and in order. You're going to use what you just learned. Better, it's more simple, and getting more on the bullseye, more than the tin ring. Very simple. Think about teaching that boy to tie his shoes. Huh? He's going to do it correctly. Yeah. He's not only going to do it correctly, but even more basic than that, stop yourself before you say correctly. Now say it. Don't use the word correctly. He's going to do it. He's going to actually do it. In other words, it's and correctly too. He's not going to do it incorrectly. But let's put it in a very simple way. The proper response is doing with the doctrine exactly what the doctrine told you to do with it. He's going to do it. And folks, like it or not, this is where the point. We've now arrived. This is where we are. We have arrived at the point in which there's going to have to be evidence that the doctrine is doing its job. This is never ever the case when it comes to the issue of trying to determine whether somebody's a Christian or not. Well, if they were a Christian, they wouldn't do that. If they were a Christian, they wouldn't say that. If they were a Christian, they wouldn't drink that. If they were a Christian, if they were a Christian, if they were a Christian, there's no way that you could be a homosexual and be a Christian. There's no way that you could be a serial killer and be a Christian. There's no way that you could be a pedophile and be a Christian. Baloney! Christians have done all of those things and worse. And some of them are written about in the Bible. And you don't use 1 John from the first word to the last to determine whether somebody's a Christian or not. But folks, there is a time and there is a place where evidence needs to be seen to determine whether or not you are a properly educated son. And that's how the doctrine's designed to work. And we're going to talk about that. That's part of the proper response. Now think about it. Don't get away from that body analogy. If you cut your knee and it needs your attention, it needs some mercy shown to it, which means to get that new stuff and not methylate. That was unmerciful. I would have rather had the cut and shoved dirt in it than mom. I didn't cry. I didn't cry when I fell and got the cut. But I bawled my eyes out when she put that methylate on it. She might as well have been putting Jack Daniels on it. Now, it's one thing to come along and see yourself in need of treatment. And it's another thing just to sit there and say, well, somebody ought to do something about that. And you just want to think, and you're sitting there, you've got the medicine in your hand, you've got the Band-Aid in your hand, you know how to take the stuff off, you know how to apply it, you know how to do everything. You know the procedure, you know the doctrine, but you don't do it. So have you, is it doing its effectual work? No. And that's how that body analogy continues to govern how we deal with things. And you're to see, I'm not talking about we're going to have these major changes within our assembly. 10 years from now, what we are 10 years from now, looking back to what we are now, there'll be a major difference. But right now, it's not going to be a big difference at all. But there's going to be a proper response where that doctrine is going to do, you're going to do with it exactly what it told you to do with it. And where the giving, the ruling, and the showing mercy is concerned, you're going to not just sit there and give an assent to it and say, yeah, I get that. But it's designed for you to do something with it. And your father's going to now make sure that you understand, and he's waiting to see evidence of that being done, or he's not going to move on. And like I said, we're not talking about big things. I'm not saying that we couldn't, from what I've heard and seen of you already, that it's apparent to me that in some of you all this is fine. But it's my job to make sure we understand this volitional testing point. Well, we'll stop right there. I don't know if that gives us any extra time today or not, but I'm going to have to stop saying that. I actually thought everything I do today would fit in one class and we could dismiss second session today. I talk too much. That's just the simple truth of it. No, that is not true. So we're gonna finish the introduction to this this positive and proper response and going to this exhortation, and then we're going to deal with it in detail so that we clearly understand the positive and proper response. And once that's been done and that evidence is there, then we move on to the next one. And these exhortations are going to get shorter and shorter by me personally to you each time. But we're still going to pause, and we're going to still make mention of it, at least in the early goings of the curriculum as we go on through level one. And then probably by the time we get into level two, there's no need. In fact, that you'll see that in the book of Proverbs. You watch as you read through the first nine chapters of Proverbs, that particular kind of exhortation goes, it just trails off because it becomes second nature to the Father and the Son after a while. All right, we'll stop right there and we'll pick it up with the positive and proper response to the doctrine we just learned in Romans 12, 3 through 8 next time with our heads back.